And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Straight on his route running. He's got to get here out of the backfield. Run Moore! Touchdown, Arizona!
Whoa. I think I just figured something out, Beavis.
What?
This sucks.
Yeah, it really sucks.
This sucks more than anything that has ever sucked before.
The only thing else I got to say is, how about them Cowboys?
How about them Cowboys indeed?
Well, that was bad, Cowboys fans. But we're here to react to it and move on together on About Them Cowboys. We got two guys that were out at the game covering it all, John Machota and Saad Youssef from The Athletic here. And in the hosting chair, it's KT, fun loss, Turner. Hey, KT.
Hello, Kent. Never a fun loss.
With you around,
especially
it is.
In Arizona. Like, if you're losing to, like, Larry Fitzgerald era Cardinals from 10 years ago, maybe. Kurt Warner teams, maybe. Not good there. And I don't know. There's a lot of takeaways I know that we're all going to have. We're also going to get you ready for the Patriots on this episode. Let's start with you, John. Holy cow. No one saw that coming. We all picked the Cowboys to win. What were you thinking about 7 o'clock on a Sunday evening?
Well, I'll start with pregame and tell you that where we were situated in the press box, it was a great angle of where the Cardinals players run out for the starting lineups. And I was like, oh, this will be good. A little something for the gram. And as I said to Saad and some others around me, there's not even a player on the Cardinals that I want to even take this video slash picture of. And it really made me think, like, if you were just a casual NFL fan and you had to name a player that plays right now, not injured, but plays in games right now, I would pick the Cardinals as the team that would be hardest for someone to name a player on. Like, it's not like this is some... You know, you talk about Larry Fitzgerald. I just go back to a couple years ago when, they had obviously Kyler Murray was the face of it and, had Chandler Jones and some guys like that. And then now I look at this roster. And so even knowing that, okay, the Cowboys are going to be without three of their starting offensive linemen, Trayvon Diggs, obviously season ending injury the previous week in practice, this isn't going to be the same blowout I would have expected beforehand, but Vegas didn't think that either. They were still a double-digit favorite to win that game. I don't know. I guess if the Cardinals go on to have a 8-9-1 season, I will stand corrected and say I didn't give them their due. But I don't think this is a very good Cardinals team. And so we'll get into the offense, a lot of issues there, including the red zone. But my biggest takeaway was just I did not think this defense was capable of playing that poorly. I would not think this defense was capable of giving up that many big plays, 20-plus yard runs in the first half, much less in an entire game, much less in any two or three games. And then last but not least, when they finally clawed back within a single score and you felt like the Cowboys had the momentum to on the very next series for the Cardinals to complete that long pass where you just have a receiver wide open 20 yards down the field and not a person, I don't know, like even looking in his direction, that's not stuff I can even remember seeing from a Cowboys defense over these last few years. So it was one of those things where, yeah, the defense was dressed in Cowboys uniforms, but they looked nothing like the Cowboys defense that we've seen really since Micah Parsons has been on the team. I was stunned.
What about you, Saad?
You know, when I was kind of like thinking before the game and John kind of posed that question, it was, Rondale Moore, James Conner. And like, when you're thinking about these guys, and those were the guys that ended up making the plays. I do wonder if we kind of did miss, I know the Cardinals are not a very good team and they're chosen by many to be one of the worst teams and in the race for Caleb Williams and all that stuff. But there is also the fact, when you look back, that they were up 16-10 going into the fourth quarter against the Commanders, then they blew it. They were up whatever that was, like, what was it, 21-24 or something like that against the Giants, and then they blew it. So they did show that they were able to at least play a little bit, but this Cowboys team was supposed to be bigger and better. Whether you want to say they're Super Bowl favorites or whatever, they were supposed to be better. My biggest thing was there was the decimated offensive line, and then there was the loss of Trayvon Diggs. One's on offense, one's on defense. And to me, it was one unit is going to have to pick up whichever unit is slacking. The problem is both units ended up slacking. And so I think, that was a really tough one. But I still think that just the same way that a lot of us were saying, you know, even the first 2 weeks, it was way too early to crown them. I think it's way too early to also press the panic button with any kind of sincerity or anything like that. But it was definitely not something that was encouraging. And, you know, for me, the two things that stood out most, and I'm sure we're about to get into all this right now, was just the troubling run defense popping up again and just the atrocious red zone offense in all ways.
Yeah, and when you say crown them, I don't even go as far as crowning any champion. I go from, I thought that there was a clear difference between the Niners, Eagles, and Cowboys, and everybody else in the NFC. Now, there's a clear difference between the 49ers and the Eagles and everybody else in the NFC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, yeah, maybe. And I guess what
Niners ain't laying that egg. Niners ain't laying that egg.
Is this an anomaly, this, or does it show you who the Cowboys are?
Well, it can't be an anomaly because we've seen it each of the last 3 years. We saw it last year against Washington and at the end of the season. We saw it 2 years ago against Denver. So since Brock Purdy has taken over as the starting quarterback of the 49ers, they haven't even come close to having a game like that.
Yeah, they do kind of wipe out teams. That's for sure. I would say the Eagles, they could kind of happen to them. I mean, the Eagles are farting around at the Patriots in week one, and, you know, we'll get a good look at them here this week. But I do think you're right. This is the type of thing that happens far too often and has happened far too often every time we do think the Cowboys are this dominant thing, you know?
And I'm also factoring in the teams that they did it against. I'm not talking – I use the Washington one as an example, and then the Broncos one is because where those teams were headed at those times, it shouldn't have been even a situation where you're getting drilled, you know? Like, it should be at the worst. It's a close game. You pull it out late. To play that way against that Cardinals, again, hey, maybe we look back on this and it's like the Cardinals were the surprise team of the 2023 NFL season. I doubt it.
Yeah. I think the 49ers are a good example, but I really look at the Eagles more so than even the 49ers as kind of like the model in terms of consistency. When I look at Jalen Hurts, and this stat last night blew me away while after watching Monday Night Football, was he's 20-1 in his last 21 starts. 20-1. That is absolutely ridiculous. And so, you know, you talk about not laying that egg. I think the Eagles are the one that you know, don't really lay that egg as they have it in their last, and just to clarify, last 21 regular season starts, so it doesn't count the Super Bowl. But you know, just really, really, when you look at the teams that do belong, I do agree with you, John, that it's Eagles and 49ers at the top. I wouldn't go as far as to say it's Eagles and 49ers and then it's everybody else in the NFC. I think there is another tier.
I don't think that the Cowboys, yeah, but I was saying that, yeah, of course I'm not going to put the Cowboys in the same as like the Cardinals or maybe the Falcons or something like that, but now they're Detroit's right there with them. I don't know that they're a better team than Detroit, you know, and I thought that there was a clear gap between them. Also, with the you talk about the 21 straight games or whatever with what's it called? With Hurts. I mean, I look at really since that time that Brock Purdy's taken over, I can't think of a time where the Niners, I mean, yeah, they got blown out by the Eagles after Brock Purdy got knocked out of the game, but they haven't been a team that's come close to playing that thing that was out there right there. And to your point, Saad, the offense did need to step up. If the defense is going to play like that, that and lay an egg like that, then you have to kind of surprise. And I thought they were going to for a little bit there when Gallup was starting to have the game that he was. I'm like, oh, this is a sign that they'll turn this thing around and get it going. But that never happened. And, you know, I just, again, I think that this is a defense first team, so I don't expect the defense to play that way. But when they do, which shouldn't be very often, the offense has to pick it up. And clearly they weren't in a position to do that. The receivers, quarterback, not on the same page. Offensive line was a patchwork group that wasn't great, but it wasn't the reason they lost the game. But just an ugly game all around. Outside of Brandon Aubrey kicking field goals, there isn't much from that game that you take away and go, oh, this is good, this is good. I mean, there's 19 guys that played on defense. And yeah, multiple times yesterday when we talked to Dan Quinn, he specifically mentioned three who he thought played well out of those 19. And that was Deron Bland, Malik Hooker, and DeMarcus Lawrence.
Yeah. Well, you know, like I was thinking about some of the games of the recent past. One that came to my mind was week 18 last year, or a late game a few years back when they're trying to make the playoffs in Philadelphia. Like games where you're like really throwing the kitchen sink at it. And those are the most demoralizing defeats to me. The ones like they're actually trying. Remember last year they're just trying to get some points on the board and then get the offense off the field and get ready for the playoffs. And they couldn't do it. Like that was demoralizing. The problems with the offense down the stretch and things like that. I wasn't demoralized by Sunday's loss. I just thought they got their butt kicked. Like, and I almost can handle that more than we've exhausted all options. I never once felt that they were exhausting all options to try to go win that game on Sunday. And, well, no, I just think, like, right or wrong, I didn't, like, there was no urgency. Even, like, down 12 there at the end, you're just kind of take your time, we'll get down there. And it's like, well, you're not giving your defense a chance to, you know, give have any leeway here if you're going that slow. Like, I thought a change of pace for the offense would have been good. So I was frustrated to see that. I think our ranking the frustrations, you do probably start at the defense first for letting a Josh Dobbs-led team, you know, rip you apart like that. But the urgency and just the lack of just kind of focus with the penalties and just the all-around vibe is just yuck. And I don't even know how to put yuck into words besides that sucked, and I don't really know where their head was because yeah. And the down other thing 12, too is teams snap into it sometimes.
Yeah, and I feel like maybe they were playing down their competition a little bit because of how bad the Cardinals were. And you look at like Josh Dobbs. Like I'm sure there's some people that don't know anything about him, and then all of a sudden are just like, look how well he played against the Cowboys. All this stuff, it's great, whatever. It's his first NFL win. The yeah. game last year at the end of the season against Washington.
Yeah,
I mean it's not like they sat there and you were looking at them and you're just like, oh yeah, I don't know, man. This is gonna be a good Washington team. You can't sleep on them. That Denver team a couple years before that. It just is one of those things where Teddy Bridgewater is their quarterback. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not like Sam Howell got that starting job this year a lot because of the way he looked in that game. Washington was like, whoa, what do we have here? I mean, are the Cowboys about to do that to the Cardinals? Are the Cardinals about to go like, yeah, and even when Kyler's healthy, let's stick with Dobbs here. Look what he did against the Cowboys.
Yeah. So first of all that stuff, like, it just makes me feel like chalk that up to, A, sometimes you just mismatch on a game plan or you just weren't ready to go during the week. Were they practicing as if three of their offensive linemen wouldn't be playing? And
no,
I'm not
no,
searching
that's one
for
of the biggest regrets that Mike McCarthy had after the game is that he wasn't able to get more reps during the week for TJ Bass, you know, for Chuma Adoga, you know, filling in, you know, Brock Hoffman and that. Because it sounds like, I mean, Mike McCarthy's not going to throw the medical staff under the bus because they're just doing the best that they can with the information that they have. Mm-hmm. And I would say probably Tuesday, Wednesday-ish, they were feeling pretty strongly that at least two of those three were going to play. And probably we're even feeling that way even maybe Thursday afternoon. And then by Saturday morning when they have that practice they always do the day before a game, that's when they really realize, like, well, we're not going to have two of these guys for sure. And we might be without three. And at that point, there's no more practice time left.
No, yeah, you're done. Let's talk about the red zone offense a little bit. I mean, the big thing that we could talk about is the interception. And maybe we do start there. That looks bad on pretty much all fronts. If I were going to grand scheme this thing a little bit wider, I would say, man, there's some bits and bad takes today, including RG3 saying that the Cowboys miss Zeke. I don't know if that they miss Zeke as much as they just... I didn't see a lot of separation, didn't see a lot of guys getting open and things like that. And that's the most concerning thing that I have about the offensive coordinator change or offensive play caller change with Kellen leaving and Mike McCarthy taking over. My biggest concern is the last time he was calling plays, one of the reasons that he was forced to leave is because guys weren't getting open. And you have to create that. You have to help create that. Guys can get open on their own, but you have to help create that, and I've worried a little bit about that. And that's kind of where I ended up going, well, that's 2 weeks in a row settling for a lot of field goals. And it's your first game that you could somewhat call competitive, I guess. If you wanted to be honest, you could say that the Cowboys haven't played a competitive game yet this season. But I walked away from that being concerned. That Dak's interception, definitely concerning, but I don't know if he had anywhere else to go. You know, it sure didn't look like he had anywhere else to go with the football, but he did have more time to throw it. So maybe he just thought he could slide it by the linebacker. I don't know. What'd you see on that play, Saad?
Well, I think on that play in particular, I think your best bet is probably, you know, like you said, no good options, but probably CeeDee Lamb on the flag route is probably your best bet on that play. But there just wasn't a lot going on. And, you know, depending on when you're listening to this podcast, you know, I have a red zone. I have a piece kind of like focused on the red zone issues going up, you know, Wednesday morning. And great. One of the things that I looked at a lot and looked at the numbers was, you know, when we talked to Brian Schottenheimer on Monday, he was very defensive about his players. You know, we talked a lot. I think early on he was asked about, you know, well, you don't have Rob Gronkowski. so how does that work? I'm joking. It wasn't like that. But basically, he was saying, no, it was like
specifically, a reporter said about not having guys that you can throw the ball up to in the red zone, like Mike Evans, Dez Bryant, Rob Gronkowski, because you know those guys just grow on trees. You can just go and grab one of them right off the streets whenever you need one for your red zone. Continue. Sorry.
Was very defensive about that. Then I asked him a question about, you know, do players have to adjust to how they play in the red zone? Do they have to learn how to play in the red zone? And he was even more strongly defensive when it comes to that. And just real quick to quote, he said, it's not a personnel issue. And then he said, it's not a matchup thing. We've got terrific players. We just got to execute better. We have to coach better, all that kind of stuff. To some extent, I agree. Like, it's not just a personnel issue, but it is partially there's a two-sided personnel thing. It's one, the players have to make plays, but two, you have to, as a coaching staff, adjust on how you're setting those players up. So you don't have Dez Bryant anymore to throw a fade ball. Maybe Michael Gallup is a poor version of that, but he's not Dez Bryant. That's to be clear. But then you have all these guys like Deuce Vaughn or Kevontae Turpin or Tony Pollard or CeeDee Lamb, all these players that are supposed to be good in space. You have to utilize them differently. You don't have a veteran tight end like Jason Witten or Dalton Schultz. And for people that think Dalton Schultz was like, you know, a young player when he broke out, he was in his third year in the NFL when he became a starter and took over Blake Jarwin. This is Jake Ferguson's second year. So you don't have the same veteran presence of that you do in that regard. And when you look at the red zone numbers from 2021 and 2022, I mean, it is all Zeke, Dalton Schultz, Amari Cooper. It's all those guys. It's all guys that aren't here anymore. So that doesn't carry over. So for me, it's a lot of coaches have to figure out. I do agree with Schottenheimer that it's not a personnel issue in the sense that we don't, like, the Cowboys don't have players to make plays in the red zone. But the coaches certainly have to do a better job, KT, like what you said, of getting people open, scheming things differently, and things of that sort, because what they're doing right now is they're trying to use, or it seems like they're trying to use a bunch of concepts that worked with a Dez Bryant or with a Dalton Schultz or with a Zeke Elliott, and they're trying to transfer all that over to what's happening right now, and it just doesn't work like that.
Yeah, and they have a CeeDee Lamb right now that's better than any of those previous guys outside of Dez Bryant in his prime. CeeDee Lamb, where he's at right now, I mean, he's clearly a top 10 wide receiver. To be through these three games without him having a touchdown catch is just crazy to me. But, you know, to your point, KT, you talk about, you know, Mike McCarthy and Green Bay having issues with trying to get his, you know, players the ball and stuff like that. There were plenty of complaints about that with Kellen Moore, too. That was like, oh, these guys just, they run down the field, turn around, nobody's open and stuff. So it's like, you know, so we'll bring in another offensive coordinator and then another offensive coordinator, another offensive coordinator. And then it just, it's always going to be on the offensive coordinator. I mean, at some point, this is the NFL. Players have to make plays. Dalton Schultz has 7 catches for 47 yards this year. I don't think that Ezekiel Elliott would have made any difference in that game on Sunday, particularly. I thought Tony Pollard ran the ball well. They gave him his opportunities because they were playing the two high safeties, even into the red zone. That's why they were running a little bit more than most thought, including myself, late in that game there, as opposed to trying to throw into some tough situations. But for me, if it gets into those spots where, you know, it's a fourth down or, you know, late in game, you got one play, I'm putting it near 88. If he doesn't make the play, it gets picked off, oh well. That's my best playmaker on offense. I can live with him trying to make a play and it not happening. I think there needs to be more attempts to 88, just like there used to be with Dez Bryant, where it was almost like, hey, they get down in the red zone. You know Dez is getting at least one shot on a jump ball, maybe two. And I'm not saying even throwing fades and jumps to CD, but your best playmaker on offense, he needs to touch the ball more in that red zone area because he's the best opportunity to make a play down there.
I agree with you on that. You know, let me say one thing about the Kellen Moore thing. There were complaints. Okay, and that's fine overall, especially seeing what happened with the offense down the stretch. There should not have been any complaints about Kellen Moore in the red zone last year when they were number one in the league in red zone efficiency. The year before that, when they were number six in the league in red zone efficiency. You have to wipe out 2020 because of Dak not being there for most of that. Like, the stuff about Kellen Moore, we all can, like, look at it from as a whole. Yeah, maybe it was never enough to get done. I think Kellen Moore probably has more things in the bag so far. And we'll find out. You know, McCarthy's got a lot to prove here, and he knows there's a lot on the line. I agree with you 100% on CeeDee Lamb. I think it's the thing we're kind of waiting on, and I think there's time and all these numbers and all that stuff. We talk about red zone efficiency. That'll change real quick once you score, have a day where you go 3 for 3 or whatever, you know, like that can change really quick and look a lot better. But my biggest thing is like not seeing a lot of guys get open, one. Okay. Like the other thing, just the urgency though, down 12. I have a hard time dealing with that. Now, that was interesting. Dak said, if I need to use my feet more, he said that. And I was like, you know, maybe we've talked about that a lot, but we talked about that a lot when he was 25, 26, 27. We talk about that always 30. I don't know. Is that something you guys want to see or not?
Yeah. There was one play in particular on first and goal, the two plays before the final interception that Tony, like they hand off to Tony Pollard. And if Dak pulls that, maybe he's not getting it. I mean, he's going to be up against a safety and maybe he trucks the safety for a touchdown. At the least, they don't lose the 2 yards that Tony Pollard lost on that play. I think you have to have a little bit more RPO. It looks like there's too much straight run, downhill run or straight run plays and not enough, you know, options for Dak to do something else with it. I do think that Dak in some way, whether it's his feet or his arm, both, has to be a little bit more accountable in the red zone. And by the way, Dak for his career is a phenomenal red zone passer. He plays really well. I think he's above he's up there with literally like the Brady's and all that stuff in red zone passing efficiency. Two things that I do want to say that are related to this, KT, is that from 2006 to 2017, which is Mike McCarthy's tenure in Green Bay, number six in the league in that span in red zone touchdown percentage. Number six. The teams in front of them were the New England Patriots, Tom Brady, New Orleans Saints, Drew Brees. Indiana, Peyton Manning and Andrew Luck, the Dallas Cowboys, Tony Romo, and then the anomaly is the Detroit Lions of all teams that were really good. And then the Green Bay Packers with Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers. The point is...
Well, that's Calvin Johnson's era. That's why you could just throw it up to Calvin Johnson.
Just throw the fade.
And a chunk of Matthew Stafford and all that. But the point is that...
Don't be talking smack about these Lions. Sorry, go on.
The point is that when you look at the pattern over a very long extended period of time, the quarterback is what drives a lot of this stuff. All these teams that have been that good, whether it's the feet or the arm, look, Brady, Breeze, Manning, Luck, Romo, these aren't rushing quarterbacks, but they still got the job done. And this isn't like, you know, you're not cherry picking here. This is literally the entire McCarthy era. Again, he was number six. So that's where I kind of stand on what McCarthy has on the wall and as well as what Dak needs to prove.
To your question, though, KT, from my perspective, I don't look at that game as one where I'm like, man, Dak, you just got to run a little bit more. Like,
yeah,
it's the Arizona Cardinals in week three. It's not there. If he, and now their red zone, big moments late in the season that can win you the division and get you a bye in the first round of the playoffs, and then obviously playoff games, Super Bowl, absolutely. Week three against the Cardinals, you should be able to win that game with your arm.
Yeah.
There weren't many opportunities for him. Like people look at Dak on that fourth down pass in the red zone where he threw it into the dirt and it was incomplete. They're like, why doesn't he tuck and run? There was a Cardinals defender screaming downhill at Dak. Like there was no way that he had a lane to run on that play. So there also, I know I singled out one opportunity, but there, generally speaking, there really wasn't a whole lot of room for Dak to run anyways in that game.
You know, I think like all that stuff about the offense is great, and you're like talking about how much were you chasing. What about the just urgency though? Did you guys have? I mean, that's something that like you kind of wanted to click into gear. I don't know. You start finding things, maybe you get something going, especially in a low energy game like that, with how things had gone. I mean, isn't that as quick as just almost hitting a red button and going, we are now into quote unquote hurry up offense? Because that drives me nuts because you don't give your defense any leeway. If you do score and you don't throw a bad interception and you do score, you're still telling your defense you got to get a three and out when you could make, you know, the other team get two or three first downs if you're, you know, flying there. And just seeing them continue to run, clock, and I know they were trying to run it because the Cardinals were, you know, playing a defense that was suited to give up yards on the ground rather than the big play. But, man, it just did not seem like anyone had it in gear in terms of hustling. It's just the understanding you're down 12.
Yeah, I mean, just from afar watching the game over, it looked like, because to me, I completely agree. When I'm watching that real time from the press box, I was like, why are you still running the ball here? Why is so slow? Why are they using all this clock? And I'm not saying this is the case. I'm just saying actions speak louder than words. And the actions were that what the Cardinals were doing on the back end of the defense was really screwing up what the Cowboys were doing in their passing game, and they did not feel comfortable with a lot of stuff, because I've seen too many times in those situations where they are in a hurry-up mode, whether it's late in the first half or at the end of game, where they go into their NASCAR package and they're going no huddle and they're speeding it up, and that's when they've played some of their best ball. But clearly, Jonathan Gannon, you take your hat off to him, the new head coach for the Cardinals who had been with the Eagles, he clearly came with a game plan that was one that the Cowboys offense obviously didn't have the answers for, particularly in the passing game. And that's interesting because they're going to go against a guy this week in Bill Belichick, where that's one of his big things is, you know, he's going to try and take away CeeDee Lamb. So is this another big game for Michael Gallup that ends with a Cowboys loss? They don't even get the, you know, the benefit of that. So I'm thinking like this week going in this game, you're going to have Gallup and Cooks both play pretty well to be able to take care of business. I also, the other part of it is, you know, I mentioned those last two times that it reminded me of this game, and that was the Denver game a couple years ago. You know, what followed was just an, you know, 43-3 over the Falcons. The Washington game last year, what followed is arguably Dak Prescott's best game ever up at Tampa Bay for that, you know, wild card playoff game. So I do expect them to respond accordingly. But it'll be interesting to see if the red zone offense picks up.
Oh, just, you know, something Mike McCarthy said in the Monday press conference, they did one 7-step drop all game, you know, according to McCarthy. Clearly, yeah, the Cardinals were doing a good job on the back end, but clearly the Cowboys, you know, McCarthy and Dak both kind of tipped their hat to the young offensive linemen that filled in, but it was very clear that they didn't trust those guys enough to where they could actually run a lot of the stuff that they needed to. Part of that is definitely what the Cardinals were doing on the back end, but they weren't even trying to do some of that stuff because they were down three offensive linemen.
Yeah, and that's where I go, like, John, you said something, a word that I want to talk about. You said uncomfortable. Were you talking, you were speaking more about the Cardinals' defense than the offensive line problems, or maybe it all runs together. The thing that I started thinking, though, was how many times do we watch NFL games, teams are down by two scores, and they just go, hey, let's go, and they just start moving faster. Like, why didn't that happen? Like, yeah. Uncomfortable or not, and running the ball, teams throw it against bad looks when they're down by two scores. So I get the mindset was probably, hey, we're going to go down there, we're going to score, and then we're going to get a three and out, and we're going to get the ball back, and we're going to go in. But you can't think – that's like a Jerry Jones mindset of thinking everything's going to be okay no matter what. The most, like, optimistic view ever, especially with the way that game had gone.
Like, I mean, maybe they were like gassed. Maybe they're a little gassed on the offensive line. I mean, you're playing a bunch of guys that really haven't played that much. I mean, you're playing TJ Bass, you're playing Adoga, Tyler Smith's first game back, Hoffman's, you know, starting at center. I mean, that could have been one of those things where that factored in too, where they just weren't at the level that they needed to be that they normally are with their regular offensive line. So maybe that factored in as well to where they felt like running it and trying to go downhill, it would get there, but I just didn't think that at that particular time gave him the best chance to win the game. You know, I felt like it probably gave him the best chance to score a touchdown right there. But you play to win the game.
Yeah, you play to win the game. Whatever happened to him? What's he doing? He's not Arizona State,
right?
He's still at Arizona State?
No.
Yeah. No. He was. Yeah.
Yeah. No, he was.
Yeah, he's not there anymore.
Yeah. What'd you guys think about Deion this week? That's tangential. That's kind of a Cowboy thing, right? You see that coming?
What?
Colorado.
I mean, they do put out a point spread on these games all the time. I mean, it was evident that this was eventually going to happen to Colorado.
Yeah, they do. I mean, you're right, but that bad?
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me. I mean, you got to get the right mindset here. If you think it was a great triumph and this Rudy story that they were able to beat Colorado State, then just don't pay attention to what these lines are, because they were supposed to blow out Colorado State, you know? So when they go to Autzen and they're 20-some point underdogs, I kind of felt like, especially without having Travis Hunter, it was eventually going to come down to someone was going to blow them out, you know? And if it wasn't this week, maybe it's against USC, but no, that didn't surprise me at all.
One of the best sports moments in history, I think, happened when their Oregon Duck ran out there and started beating the primetime clock with the baseball bat, and then his head fell off, and the mascot guy said, "Oh crap," and ran for it up the tunnel. He got the heck out of there. Gosh, I thought that was incredible. But I don't know.
They're coming, though. They're coming.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if he stays there, you know.
Oh, he'll be there for another year. They'll be really good next year, I think, especially if he's able to keep his son at quarterback. They'll be good.
Now, do we have any feel for what we're looking at this week for these offensive linemen?
No. I mean, in terms of knowing for sure, no.
No.
I would think that the last thing they want to do is potentially fall to 2-2. So I think that anybody that's close probably goes. I doubt all three go. And so I would think Zach Martin's probably back, just off of the fact that last week at this time they thought, you know, he would probably be good to go for the game. Now having another week under his belt, I think you can count on him being there. The Tyron Smith thing is kind of up in the air. You would think that he dressed out, so he has to be pretty close too. So because of that, I feel pretty good that one plays for sure and probably two, but I'm not certain on all three. And you know, hey, it's like I've heard it from fans, and I know you guys probably have too, is the whole like, well, would they have all played if it would have been, you know, playoff game, something like that? I don't know. That was the first time I've ever seen Mike McCarthy talk about something like that after the game, about how he regretted not being able to get more time and practice for some of those other guys. And to me, for a veteran coach to say that to me just said, we thought that they were going to play all week, and that we were like, hey, we'll be good. We'll be able to put these guys out there. And then was kind of blindsided by it, you know, on Saturday. And so because of that, I think that those guys are all close. I would think that I think a couple of them probably play in this game. I would be very surprised if all three are out again.
I had a weird thought, and it was almost about like the NBA sometimes, and we'll see if the NBA cracks down on the rules. No one, and I'm not arguing these guys are hurt. We know these guys are hurt, okay? But it almost reminded me of like, oh, well, we got a tough back-to-back, so Luka's not going to play tonight, and hopefully we can go get the win against the Spurs. You know, like,
well, that's it. No, that's a key factor. Now, but that's the thing. You're saying that Luka's not going to play right now against the Spurs because they're the Luka Spurs. That you wouldn't say that for the Dirk Spurs. You'd be like, no, we need Dirk. We need Dirk for this one. And I use that because that's a good comp to that Cardinals team where it's like, you know, no, we want to make sure that we got our guys for that Niners game. But it's the Cardinals, man. We'll be fine. We'll be able. I mean, it's going to be tough, but it's the Cardinals. We'll be able to figure this one out, you know.
And also knowing how, and Mike McCarthy's comments were interesting about that stuff. But I do know, like, and we've talked about this a little bit. I do appreciate that Mike McCarthy does have confidence that they're going to be good and has an eye towards December and January and February. Like he's always been that way, even in Green Bay. Like, let's get our guys as healthy as they can be when the playoff starts. I appreciate the crap out of that. So, I mean, I don't really disagree with the mindset. The guys aren't, like, good. Let's face it, injuries is not the reason you lost the game. You lost the game because you didn't play well. John, your piece today about Dan Quinn, you know, and what he said I thought was really good. Just like, where was the energy? I don't know how you manufacture the energy. You need it to be Micah Parsons at all times. That's a lot to ask for Micah Parsons. Hopefully, he doesn't have to be all on Micah to provide whatever that is. When you go to Arizona, for some reason, the Cowboys are cursed in that building. But I don't even know what to like. I sit there and I did not write this off as like frustrated into the world thing. I wrote it off as they just got their ass kicked and weren't ready to go. And I can actually tolerate that more than throwing everything you can against the wall. That's just me. You guys may disagree. It's probably a lot of Cowboys fans are like that. Probably frustrates them, but like it's so sad when you're like trying trick plays and everything to get a dub, and you can't get it done because you know it's not good enough.
Yeah, but I mean, even in the second half, like when they got the back-to-back stops to start the second half, and it's 28-16. I mean, no, sorry, 21-16. They were awake at that time. That defense was, hey, we're locked in now. We got some stops. We're back in this game. One score game. Here we go. On that very first play, that Dobbs to Wilson 69-yarder, that one will forever leave me scratching my head because if you get off the field right there, I really do think the Cowboys win the game. They probably come down. There's not as much pressure on them. It's, hey, we got to go get a score. And if they would have got them to go three and out there, you would have been looking at something like, I don't know, 7-8 minutes to go in the game, needing to get a score to go win the game because you know that, hey, I feel pretty confident in our offense. If we go and take the lead, our defense will come back and we'll be good. You know, that Cardinals offense ain't going to hum like that when they're playing from behind. And it might never have, but they didn't have to, so we never had to see what that was. But that play right there, that one will always leave me scratching my head because that, to me, was what ended the game for them.
I agree. Like, you know, if you empty the clip and then you're still not getting results, you do feel a little bit worse. You feel a lot worse about that. I will also say that I understand totally sympathize with Cowboys fans and the trauma that they feel every time this sort of thing happens. And you've been seeing this for 27 years and I get it. You know, I mean, it was a totally different team and not nearly as much hype, but this is the same organization that lost to the Houston Texans in their first game ever, right? And you talk about Joshua Dobbs and Gannon getting their first win as coach and quarterback. Like, there's a lot of history that makes you feel this way. But at the end of the day, a September loss is a September loss. And I think that is some valid perspective to have as well. We're literally a few days away. And speaking of, you know, the Patriots game coming up, we're a few days away. September 29th, 2014, the 9-year anniversary of Bill Belichick being asked in a post-game press conference if the quarterback position is going to be evaluated because the Patriots got their ass kicked on Monday Night Football against the Chiefs. And Tom Brady went on to win 4 more Super Bowls after that. Point is, like, it is a September loss at the end of the day. And like, and I think that the, you know, once it starts extending and becoming a pattern and a lot worse for a lot longer, I think that's where you really start panicking.
I will also say the thing that will erase this feeling from anyone's mind is if, after five games, if they're 4-1 and this is the one loss and they beat the Patriots, they beat San Francisco, I don't think anybody will look back at this game like, well, whatever. I don't think anybody would have them any better than 4-1 after those first five anyway. But now you have to go do that. So
happens, by the way. I think that's better than you being 4-1 losing to the 49ers, because you know you're better than the Cardinals come like when it comes down to it, like at the end of the year or at the end of the day. But if you can go 4-1 and your one loss is the Cardinals, if I'm a Cowboys fan, I'd much rather that be the case than being 4-1 and the loss coming to the 49ers.
Yeah, no, I think so too. And looking, I was also thinking about this, and maybe I heard Danny Bayless, who I do a show with on 97.1 The Freak. He said this morning, he goes, maybe they just cut corners. And he goes, it's weird because you don't know these guys' lives, but it's kind of a human thing. Everyone at their job might cut a quarter just once, once or twice. Maybe that happened a little bit as well, because it's hard to avoid the hype. Everyone knew the Cardinals are not a good team, but
no, for sure, and I completely agree with that. But where this defense has been built over the last 3 years, well, last two, and then going into this year, nah, there's no excuse for that. You're not doing that. What they have in that room, the experience, the talent they have there. Yeah, you're cutting corners is a bad opening series, which they had. You had that Dobbs run and that was your wake-up call. You don't have a full game like that. Not when you talk about 85 Bears, Legion of Boom, Seattle, Ray Lewis Ravens. No, there's no excuses for that. And that's why at the beginning of this, I mentioned the Niners and Eagles, because they're not having games like that. Certainly the Niners aren't. So, no, I get that to a certain extent. And if the game would have started, I would even give you the first quarter. But you don't have a – no, that's no excuse for that defense to play like that. That wake-up call should have come after maybe the second time they went over to the sidelines, and there had to be some screaming going on there, like, what the F are we doing? So I buy that for a part of the game, not the full game.
A more untouched 45-yard touchdown, they should have snapped out of it completely at that point.
It did appear that Micah and Leighton were arguing about something there.
I don't think either of them played particularly well, so it could have been some finger pointing for all we know, but I did see the TV copy get that, yeah, for sure.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/theathletic.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Moving on to the Patriots. Okay, this team appears to not have a lot, but they did have enough to beat the Zach Wilson Jets, who Joe Namath has had enough of. We've seen this team a little bit so far this year, and it's hard to feel like they're any different than the same team we played last year. I don't know if you guys would agree with that. It seems very similar. Mac Jones is just so mid-level. Doesn't feel like a very good offense. Doesn't feel like a team who can put together, you know, some good defensive game plans. We know all that stuff, blah, blah, blah. We'll start with you, Saad. Where are you feeling? What are you feeling about this game and knowing, you know, that you know a little bit about the Patriots? You know, this should be an easy win at home.
I don't know, it should be an easy win too. But no, I mean, look, the threat that they do have, that the Patriots pose a legitimate threat to the Cowboys, is in that former Cowboy Ezekiel Elliott and Stevenson. I mean, you talk about the run defense being an issue. They have a couple of backs there in New England that are very, very good. And if they do that, and then Belichick, whatever, you know, I'm not going to get into a whole coaching thing about Belichick. He's still a very, very, very good coach who is going to take away your primary best weapon, and that's going to be CeeDee Lamb. You're going to need a lot of people to step up and be your other best player, because CeeDee Lamb most likely won't have the opportunity to do that. So I think that, you know, the Eagles struggled against the Patriots. We saw that. They came back, the Patriots did come back and, you know, make a really good game out of it. And, you know, at the end of the game, almost may have won it as well. But, I don't think the Patriots is a team that you roll over, especially because, you know, whatever happens, Belichick is still the head coach there, and Matt Patricia is still there. So, you know, they got a couple of great coaches. Right, Johnny?
Oh, my God. Matthew Patricia. Jeez. I mean, there's just something that it happens when you're at that game and you see that pencil go in his ear. You're just like, oh, game on. No, I would say Matthew Judon, Christian Gonzalez, those are the two biggest concerns on defense. Offense coming off of the game that they're coming off of, playing that way, I expect the defense to be very fired up. Also, when I look at the Patriots, what they do offensively isn't similar to the Cardinals in terms of the getting the guys in space like that in the running game. That's not their style. I think their style fits better for what the Cowboys defense is. So I think the Cowboys defense will be fine in this game. I expect to see a very motivated bunch and play really, really well. But it is that New England defense. They have some playmakers over there and I expect Bill Belichick to have a quality game plan going against this offense. So that would be the part that would concern me. But even with that being said, I do expect the Cowboys to bounce back. with a much better performance coming off of that Cardinals game, because we can sit there and talk about how stunned we are, but they have to be twice, three, five times as much as on our level. So I'm sure that they're going to be pretty focused this week. And that's even if Zeke wasn't on the team, I expect that defense to be very, very locked in.
Yeah, the return of Zeke will be the big kind of off the field, but also on the field, national media story of the week. That's why I thought it was funny. RG3 was saying that the Cowboys miss him. But I shouldn't listen to hot takes from RG3, I guess, probably. I don't listen to them. I just, you know, how do you avoid them? They get shoved in your face because of algorithms. I watched New England. I can't help but wonder if Bill Belichick is just kicking himself for not having a better quarterback.
I mean, it's hard to get a good quarterback. What did you want him to do?
It is. It is hard to get a good quarterback, as evidenced by the Jets bringing in Trevor Siemian to work out.
Evidenced by the Giants giving $40 million to Daniel Jones.
Yeah.
I mean, to give him 160, I mean, people criticize Dak's contract. To give that thing to Daniel Jones, I mean, what are we doing here?
Yeah, no, that's the whole, I think, argument for Dak. So you usually end up on the side of, supporting Dak in those arguments. Is like, if you want to do the Daniel Jones thing, you can. If you want to run Sam Howell out there for a while and see if he has anything, you can. As the Bills absolutely just tore him apart. You know, it's interesting, the quarterback thing. There's like a wild trade that's like very, very interesting to me, is like Carolina giving up everything they gave up to move up and get Bryce Young. Well, we don't know if Bryce Young can play or not. We will see. But that is probably going to be a top 10 pick that's going to end up for Chicago. Chicago's going to have a decision to make with Justin Fields. I don't know. What's some of the other big, like, has there been some like big NFL storylines through 3 weeks that have kind of jumped out at you? Been crazy.
When we're talking quarterbacks, I mean, you can't convince me that Sean Payton takes that job if he thinks Russell Wilson, he's not going to be able to have more success with him. And clearly that's been an epic disaster. The quarterback thing is just, I don't know, man. It's tough to find one. It's tough to find a franchise quarterback. That's why I think that it's going to be fascinating to see who trades up or who starts losing at the end of the season to try and get Caleb Williams, because he has the it factor, the quarterback from USC that's going to be the first pick in this draft coming up, because there just aren't many guys that you look at and you go, oh no, this guy's going to be a successful NFL quarterback. There's far more misses than even close to being hits. And so, and then the other side of it is, I mean, look at how dominant the Dolphins have been, and there's plenty of people that criticize Tua all the time. And it's like, but then there's other times where he plays at a level where you're like, yeah, he's one of the better quarterbacks in the league. I think he's right now, Vegas wise, I'm pretty sure he's the favorite to win MVP right now. So
he was last year at this time.
Yeah. It's just a tough position to really predict what they're going to be. And if you even have a little bit of the signs of, oh, I think this is the guy, more likely than not, I mean, you're giving them the bag. And honestly, we don't even have to look across the NFL. We can just look at the Cowboys game on Sunday. Like, that Cardinals team gave a lot of money to Kyler Murray. And I'm pretty sure that money that they've given him on that next contract hasn't even kicked in yet. And you don't even know if he's the guy there. And so that whole quarterback thing, I mean, look at the two best teams in the NFC to be able to get out of that Carson Wentz deal in Philly, and to be able to, you know, trade all those picks to get Trey Lance and then move off of that for San Francisco. Like, everyone's trying to find that quarterback. And really, there's nobody that you can point to that go, yep, that's the quarterback guru. That guy right there, he knows how to find him. Just go get that guy, put him on your staff, and he will find you your next franchise quarterback. That person's worth tens of millions of dollars if that person's out there.
Closest one to that is probably Andy Reid, when you look at what he's done with McNabb and then Michael Vick and Alex Smith and then now Patrick Mahomes. And, you know, I think he's probably the closest thing to a quarterback guru. But, yeah, everyone that kind of, you know, chalk that up to Sean Payton just because he did a good job with Drew Brees. Like, yeah, that wasn't it. And there's just not a lot of, again, I think Andy Reid might be the only one. And other than that, I don't really see one where I think that, you know, and even Andy Reid, all those guys that we're talking about, they're all first round picks. McNabb, Alex Smith, Michael Vick, whatever stage of their career, Patrick Mahomes, they're all different stages of first round picks. So you still have to have that talent. And I think Andy Reid's done a good job with that. Obviously Mahomes would be great anywhere, but I think Andy Reid helps a lot. So, I think he's the only one, but other than that, I don't see one out there.
Let's get to picks, and I will,
Also say this though, real quick on that. If they really did feel that way about him, why not draft another quarterback?
Yeah.
If you feel like he can find these guys, why not just draft another one? Because you're not really ever expecting him to play for Mahomes, but you know that it's the guy and you can get a ton trading for him in the future.
Well, we've always talked about Trey Lance where, you know, now you got to have practice time and develop him and all this kind of stuff. I think the formula you've mostly seen with NFL teams is that except for when Washington picked RG3 and Kirk Cousins in like the same draft, usually the younger quarterback that you invest in legitimately is a successor type. Like we saw that in New England with Brady and Garoppolo as well. Like, you know, other than that, you're picking a bunch of Brian Hoyers and whatever to back up your star quarterback, because I don't think that really materializes too much.
I'm interested to see if like Detroit tries that with Hendon Hooker, who's a little bit older, but if it comes time, and I'm not sure of the specific details on Goff's contract, but I think it's the year after next. You know, if they just go, hey, let's let him go, and then we'll let him go in year three or whatever. You know, recover from your knee, get a little better. You know, Green Bay, they're happy with Jordan Love right now. They haven't given him a really good wide receiver yet, because he's running out guys who are kind of like number two wide receivers in college. But that thing's got some buzz to it, and it's not like he's been burning the league down or anything. But he's looked pretty good and pretty comfortable. And I think that's a little interesting. You see, like, what the Bears are going to do. Like, our old guy, Eberflus, man, you got to think that doesn't last long. And they've got Justin Fields, who's got so much talent. It is just not coming together at all. And you never know, like, when it's too late or when it's too early to bail. And I don't know. There's a lot of things there. And it does make you appreciate Dak more. Coming off a week when Dak's taking a little heat because of the offense and the interception and things like that, it does make you look around and go, man, I'm glad we got him. But CJ Stroud has looked good in Houston too, by the way.
I think with a lot of these, you have to, even if you're, whether you're Andy Reid or not, you can't just keep swinging for the fences. Like you gotta, whatever the baseball analogy is, I'm not a baseball super fan, but you know, sometimes you just see the pitches and you let them go, and sometimes you swing. And I feel like Andy Reid just does a very good job of swinging when it's right. Like he does, he's not just like trying to pick a quarterback every other draft or whatever. You know, he knows when he sees a good one and he goes with it. So I think a lot of that also has to do with, you know, there's very few can't miss prospects. I mean, how many have we had in the last 20 years? Since Peyton Manning, I mean, you've had like, you know, you hear about Andrew Luck and Trevor Lawrence. That's like the two guys that like, you know, that you're dubbing that way. Caleb Williams is trending in that direction as well. But you just don't have a lot of these guys coming up and you have to be very careful.
Let's do our picks. I'll go first. Cowboys 27, Patriots 13. I think it's going to be a bounce back. It's going to be a really good atmosphere. Crowd's going to be hype. They know they need it. And I think we'll be feeling a lot better about things before we head off to San Francisco and then the Chargers again in week six as well. So I'm going 27-13 Cowboys. Let's go to you, John.
I'm going to go Cowboys 31, Patriots 13. I just really think there's going to be a bounce back from that defense, and there's going to be plenty of motivation on that side of the ball. And if there is, I think everything else will take care of itself on offense, because – the other thing that really stood out from that game against the Cardinals is, I mean, this is a Cowboys defense that there's a large sample size in them taking the ball away. For as much talk as there is about how there's a lot of randomness to, you know, leading the league in takeaways. Well, they've done it back-to-back years, which meant that they averaged 2 years ago, it was right under two takeaways per game. It was like 1.95 or something. And then last year led the league again with exactly two per game. This year, first two games of the season, they get seven. To not have a single one against the Cardinals, that's the outlier. So I think they bounce back in this game.
All right. Let's go to you, Saad.
Yeah. think the defense bounces back. I don't feel very confident about the offense. Although it should be noted, and you know, we talked about this with the coordinator.
Wait. Didn't you just get done doing a story about the red zone issues? And you're not confident about the offense? That's not what the people want to hear, Saad. You're supposed to have the answers. You're supposed to come back and go, guys, this is all going to be fixed on Sunday.
And Brian Schottenheimer, he does, you know, he has matched up a lot against Belichick, going back to his Jets days and all that kind of stuff. However, I'm going to say this is going to be an aggravating win. I'm going to say it's going to be Cowboys 16 or 19 to the Patriots 6. And I think all but one is going to be field goals. So seven points on a touchdown, and then you get like whatever that is, three or four field goals, and it's going to be, I think, the red zone issues persist.
I'm putting 19 to 6, Saad, just to make the fans feel better out there listening. Because John's right. You've got this big piece, and then you're telling us they're not going to put 20 up. That's not good. Check out Saad's piece tomorrow. That ought to be a scorcher to look at. And let's go to Kent. Kent, what oddball score do you have for us this week?
It's oddly close to Saad's. It's 20 to 5. Okay. Cowboys.
Yeah. He had 30 to 4 last week, 24 to 2.
Give it four as you always pick. You should know this off the top of your head, but I'm going to assume that you don't. But when was the last time the Cowboys, what is it, scored a safety or gave up a safety? Gave up a safety. Because you always have them giving up. Yeah. When was the last time they gave up a safety?
Ooh. John, good trivia for you.
I'll get back to you on the next episode. How about that?
Top of your head.
I feel like there was one up in Washington on like a punt or something, but I don't know.
That's what I was thinking of. I was thinking of at Washington in maybe 2021.
Yeah.
But it might be 2020. But Dak was there for that. I don't know.
Having either one or two safeties, so I'm like, I thought maybe you knew.
Yeah, every time you say safety, I think of Dan Orlovsky just
running around for a little bit
right there in the back of the end zone.
The quarterback that did that this week, was it the Colts quarterback? There was a quarterback who pulled an Orlovsky, not as
egregious. Did Minshew do it?
I think it was Minshew, yeah.
There's no way it was as egregious as Orlovsky's because it would be all over Twitter if it was. I mean, I want to say on the Orlovsky one, I want to say he was running for a while. Jared Allen was pointing at his feet. And I want to even say that maybe the Vikings mascot is in the background pointing at his feet too. Like, I mean, and he's still like got his head up like, no, head up, looking for a receiver.
Here you
like,
go, Saad. Cowboys had an intentional safety in 2020. But as far as them getting sacked, I don't know.
2020 against, or do you not know?
It was against the Saints or Eagles on Sunday Night Football.
Did DiNucci start that game?
23-9.
I'm kidding.
So intentional safety, yeah, but I can't remember Dak ever being tackled in the end zone. I might be crazy.
Yeah. And he should have been in that San Francisco playoff game at the very end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That one, I think the other thing is with a lot of these, like I remember certain ones better than others because of where we're seated at each stadium in the press box, and some of them when like they happen right in front of you are just super, super memorable. So that one, that should have been a safety. I mean, for that not to be, that was very lucky.
Well, boys, we will reconvene next week, early in the week. We will have your recap from Cowboys Patriots, and we'll be gearing you up for what we've had circled on the calendar for a long time, Cowboys at 49ers. Hope everyone out there enjoys the Zeke Bowl, and we will see you next week. Follow John and Saad on social media. Check out their articles over at The Athletic, including Saad's spicy, hot Cowboys red zone issues article that's coming out as well. We'll be back next week on About Them Cowboys. Take care, everyone.
The Fox.
Yeah.